From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable, when we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines this week. Today, our panel includes Kalama Hines, reporter with EastIdahoNews.com, Betsy Russell, the Boise Bureau Chief at the Idaho Press and the voice of the Eye on Boise blog, Rachel Spacek with the Idaho Statesman, Don Day, the founder and editor of BoiseDev.com, and Clark Corbin with the Idaho Capital Sun. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Sam. Happy Friday.
Hi, Sam.
Happy Friday. Okay, I'm going to jump right into property tax relief. And don't tune out if you're listening, because this affects you. This is money in your pocket or out of your pocket, so to speak. Clark, I know you've both covered this extensively. Betsy, will this be the year we finally see some property tax relief?
Well, that's really the big question. And that was the focus of a story that I did this week, kind of focused on efforts by Senator Scott Groh from Eagle, who happens to be the new co-chair of JFAC this year, the Budget Writing Committee, to draft a major property tax relief bill for homeowners. And this is one of three proposals that are out there right now. But Senator Groh has been meeting with lots of different parties, lots of legislators, lots of interest groups, cities, counties, and trying to bring everybody together behind a bill. And he's got a proposal to earmark 10% of Idaho's sales tax revenue each year for a credit to offset property taxes for homeowners. And this would be sufficient to reduce homeowners' property taxes by about 40%. Now, that's after the homeowner's exemption and exclusive of voter-approved levies, bonds and levies, which this bill wouldn't subsidize, but it would be very significant. The second major proposal that's out there is from Representative Bruce Skog of Nampa. He's been working on this for 2 years. His bill would simply restore the indexing of the homeowner's exemption that the legislature capped in 2016 and also raise the exemption to where it would be if the legislature had left it alone back in 2016. That means it would rise from the current cap of $125,000 to $242,000 right away. And then the third proposal would amend Idaho state law so that development impact fees could be charged for schools. They currently can be charged for a whole lot of other government services like roads and parks and police, but not for schools. And so those are some of the bills that are out there. We have new tax chairman in both houses. A really key figure on this is Representative Jason Monks of Meridian, who will be the new House Rev and Tax Chairman. And when I spoke with him, he said, everything's going to get considered. He's not committing to any particular approach at this point, but he is open to all of them. And Representative Skog told me that if they don't get it done this year, they might as well just all be sent home. Also, Senator Groh, who is a CPA, said we have done three major income tax relief bills in 2 years, and those have benefited businesses and they have benefited landlords. But his CPA clients haven't been telling him they have a problem with our income tax rates. Neither the businesses nor the individuals, everyone's complaining about property tax on homeowners, especially after what the legislature did in 2016 with capping the homeowners exemption. So he is hopeful that this will be the year. And with the state's huge surplus, they have the money to do it if they choose to.
Clark, talk about that surplus. There's a lot of money sitting around in Idaho's bank, right?
Yeah, there is. And the interesting thing about it is even though revenues have missed their targets lately in the last few months, Idaho is still poised to have a surplus of like $1.54 billion. That's according to the latest state budget reports. That's going to be the latest report issued before the new legislative session starts in about 3 weeks. And then at that point, we'll have a brand new budget and revenue forecast. But I was able to follow up on Betsy's story. I thought she did an excellent job. And I think they're going to make a serious push this year with the surplus, being able to use some of that, you know, $1.54 billion in projected surplus. And Betsy did a great story. I followed up with Representative Wendy Horman, who is the other new co-chair of the JFAC committee. And without voicing support for one of the three specific proposals, Representative Horman said she does believe that this is the year to take on property taxes. She thinks that their legislature has a responsibility to hear any of these proposals. That was kind of what Betsy was alluding to with her interview with Representative Monks. I know that in the past, last year, there had been a proposal that did not get a hearing in the House. And so Representative Horman says, we have this big surplus. We've done income tax the last couple of years. We need to take a serious run at the property tax situation this next year. And so I think with some clout behind it, with the two new co-chairs of JFAC, with another, what would be a third massive surplus coming together, and the fact that this is on a lot of Idahoans' minds right now because those property tax notices were just sent out in early December. And so this is something that's on a lot of people's mind. There seems to be some momentum building behind it with some influential legislators. And there seems to be a large surplus coming together again. So I think it'll be really something to watch this year. And I think they'll take a serious shot at it, like Betsy said.
Well, that's a very positive from both of you, because I know I was going to say, not to be the wet blanket, but realistically, they do this every year. They talk about we're going to cut property taxes, and then there's some brouhaha, and then nothing happens. They just bump up the circuit breaker, which is great and a lifeline for seniors who qualify for the program. But for everybody else, it doesn't really do anything. So,
Actually, Sam, I mean, the action they've taken on the circuit breaker in the last couple of years has actually reduced the number of low-income seniors in Idaho who can get it.
That's right.
So there's still work to be done on the circuit breaker as well.
Absolutely. Well,
Sam, you're right. We've heard this before. We've heard this about the grocery tax before. And so at the end of the day, it is something that would have to make it out of committee and pass both houses. But it seems like there is momentum. But you and Betsy are absolutely right. We've heard this before. And so we'll see if there is some action, in fact, this year.
All right. We'll wait and see. Let's jump to the Boise Police Department investigation, which is now underway. Don, Boise Dev had a story on this. What do we know so far?
Yeah, Michael Donnelly.
Uh-oh, we may have lost Don. Hold on.
Hello.
Okay, hold off, Don. We're going to switch over to Kalama. The Daybells appeared in court together for the first time in quite a while. Tell us what happened. Give us a little idea of what's going to happen and if and when we're actually going to see a trial for this husband and wife team.
If and when is a good question. Yeah, it's actually the first time that they've appeared in court together. And at this hearing, Chad's attorneys informed the judge that they had just received 115 items of discovery and requested that the trial be held no earlier than the end of October 2023, or preferably sometime in 2024. They were asking for additional time to review these 150 items of discovery. Lori's attorney team reminded the court that Lori has not yet waived her right to speedy trial and informed the court that if the trial is not held by the end of February, February 21st to be exact, he'll be filing a motion claiming that her right to a speedy trial has been violated and requesting a dismissal of all charges. So Judge Boyce decided on a date of April 3rd, 2023. That is the date for the trial, and the trial is expected to last about 10 weeks, which would put the decision in the jury's hand on this this timeline, sometime in mid June.
And we should point out, Lori and Chad both have multiple charges against them. After the remains of her two kids were found buried in his backyard. And this is just, this is a case that just keeps going and going. And like you said, speedy trial, not speedy at all.
Well, so the trial was kind of delayed by a competency evaluation, sorry. Lori was just actually declared competent to stand trial in November. So that was a big reason for the delay, is she was being evaluated for her mental state and whether or not she could stand trial for for, like you said, a litany of charges.
All right. So sounds like April 3rd, date to watch now. We'll see again if that happens.
And just to be clear, April 3rd, 2023, because I feel like the year is necessary for this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I'm going to jump to Rachel. Rachel, the Valley View School District is overcrowded and nobody wants to pay to fix it. And this actually can be tied back to the property tax relief bill, which we'll do in a minute. But first, give us some background, Rachel. What's going on at Valley View?
Yeah, absolutely. The story I wrote this week, you know, has a lot going on in it. But basically, at its core, the Valley View School District is way overcrowded, particularly their elementary schools. You know, they've put in portable classrooms. They've run out of space in many schools for these portable classrooms. At least two of the elementary schools in Valley View have the full fourth grade, and then another one has the full fifth grade in portable classrooms. And this is largely because of two failed bonds that the district tried to pass, one in August, one in March. And they both failed by pretty thin margins on that two-thirds majority. And those were to build two new elementary schools. And with those failing and they're not having, you know, any, basically the district told me there's nothing that they can do. And they've resorted to what I mentioned in the story, which is asking developers for donations, which that has to be a donation because, as Betsy mentioned, they cannot legally collect impact fees. So yeah, they're asking developers for donations. They're flexible or not, you know, they're complying with that and some are not. And they're asking cities and the county to basically be conscious of the developments and the projects that you approve, because, you know, all of these new homes, the kids are going to be stuffed into these overcrowded classrooms.
Well, you mentioned in the article that they're busing a lot of kids just further away. What happens if no one ponies up this volunteer cash? Do they just keep doing that? What happens when all the away schools are full? I mean,
I don't know. You know, I don't think they're at that point yet where we're talking about what happens. But they are at that point where they are, you know, Joey Palmer, the spokesperson for the Valley View School District, told me that some new subdivisions, you know, can see these elementary schools like from their windows, but their kids can't go there because they're so full. So they're being bused, you know, basically across the county, 10 miles away. So it's just kind of crazy what's going on. And for the district to ask, you know, they've asked the city of Caldwell for a straight like moratorium on development within the boundary of the Lakeview Elementary School, which is 235 students over capacity.
Wow.
Yes.
Just wow. Okay. We'll keep an eye on that. Don, I think we have Don back. The Boise Police Department investigation underway. What do we know?
Yeah, so if you can hear me, Sam, last week the city fired Jesus Hara in a action from the city council. This is by a 5-1 vote of the council. He was the Office of Police Accountability director. And then on Tuesday, the council heard from Michael Bromwich, and he is from an East Coast firm called Steptoe and Johnson. That firm is going to lead a $500,000 probe into the Boise Police Department. This was triggered after the revelations in November that a former police captain had made racist comments and was planned to appear at a conference for white nationalists. Some of his racist comments and writings appear to have happened while he was an active Boise police captain. The council, the mayor called for the investigation. The council said, sure, let's do this. And it's underway. Bromwich said that unlike law enforcement that will say, quote, we will leave no stone unturned and follow every lead, that's not what they will do. He said that is the ticket to an endless and very costly investigation. Conducting investigations like this are about what is worth pursuing and what is not worth pursuing, and we will have a well-qualified team to make those judgments. There's no timeline on when this may happen. Abramowitz did talk a bit about the process and saying he may issue interim reports. So if things of interest to the community come along as they go, they may issue those reports, and they will definitely issue a final report. The mayor said that the aim of the investigation isn't to look into just Bringelson specifically, but to look more broadly at racism within the department. And she also made clear that this isn't about people's beliefs or thoughts, but if their beliefs and thoughts have impact on their actions as officers or others. It is of note, and this isn't in our reporting, but I think this is important to note. Former Boise Police Chief Mike Masterson wrote an op-ed that appeared on the Boise Guardian, and I believe also in the Idaho Statesman, questioning the investigation. His argument essentially boiled down to that it's too expensive, that it could have been done inside, and he quote said he called it the early McCarthyism rhetoric of the mayor, and said that the mayor was casting dispersions on the men and women of a quote really good police department. He's no longer the chief. He's retired. He was appointed by former Mayor Beter. And so, you know, you've got some people coming out saying this is problematic. The mayor says this is something that we need to do. Regardless of the opinions, the investigation is underway and moving forward.
Wow. All right. Interesting. Interesting. Kalama, and just a heads up, folks, this story is a little icky. Kalama, you originally brought us the story of a funeral director accused of not disposing of bodies over in Eastern Idaho. Now his trial has been postponed. And this affects a lot of people because the family members of those who died, they're really hurting, as you said in the article.
Yeah, and there are numerous families that are affected and continue to be affected, and they continue to show up at court, even though the trials keep getting delayed because of how much information is involved here. And just to remind the viewers, so again, this is, as Sam said, icky. Downer Funeral Home in Pocatello was shut down on September 3rd, 2021. After police found numerous bodies in various stages of decomposition, kind of stacked in the funeral home. EastIdahoNews.com kind of uncovered some other stuff around this story that Downard was responsible for getting bodies to Idaho State University's cadaver program, but was not providing those bodies. Mm-hmm. And Idaho State University was actually the ones that called Pocatello PD to kind of start this investigation. So anyway, he was scheduled for a pretrial conference for 63 misdemeanor charges. So far, only misdemeanor charges, because misdemeanors have a one-year statute of limitations, where felony charges have a little more time. And the 63 misdemeanor charges came with about 4,500 pages of documents from the prosecutor's office, excuse me. So the trial was delayed again until March 13th because the defense does not have any kind of case law to build a defense around in this case. This isn't something that happens regularly, basically. So March 13th is now a pretrial conference schedule. And I spoke with Bannock County Prosecutor Stephen Herzog, who told me that it is a possibility, quote unquote, that felony charges could be filed by that March 13th date.
Another disturbing trial in Eastern Idaho that we're waiting for. Okay, thanks, Kalama, for the update. Don, what is going on with this tiny little chunk of land downtown that the city may turn into a bargaining chip?
Yeah, real estate can be an interesting game. The Capital City Development Corporation purchased a 0.08-acre parcel of land downtown near the Shredder, which is just to the south of the J.R. Simplot headquarters. In 2019, the Capital City Development Corporation, the urban renewal agency here, bought this piece of land because they hoped to roll up a whole bunch of different properties and build something cool someday. But the time frame for the urban renewal district that encompasses that property is ending. And so they said, hey, you know what? We're going to auction this off to the highest bidder. So they got two bidders. One was the family of the J.R. Simplot, of J.R. Simplot. And two was a local developer by the name of Bill Clark. Bill Clark bid $3,000 more. During that CCDC meeting several years ago, the board tied, and that's frankly fairly unusual. CCDC tends to all vote kind of one way, and it's unanimous most of the time. And so they tied, and that killed the deal. And essentially, the two parties, the two sides, the two people who bid, the Simplot family said, well, you know, if we can't get this piece of land, we aren't going to be able to develop this big empty lot. And isn't that what CCDC is about, is developing empty lots? But the other developer, Bill Clark, said, yeah, but it's an open bid. I want it fair and square. And, you know, who knows what we'll do. So that killed the action in 2019. Well, I happen to notice by reading a long document this week that the CCDC was going to trade this to the city of Boise. They were going to essentially give it to the city, which is allowed under the state of Idaho. And when I poked around with the city of Boise, they basically said that they could use this in a future future real estate trade. Well, a little math here shows you that who would they want to trade with except for the Simplot Corporation? The Simplot family. They are separate here. The city wouldn't really comment. They helped clarify a couple of small fact things. There is a lease on this little piece of land. It's being used for construction efforts downtown right now. That expires next fall. And then after that, the city might have itself that little bargaining chip that you mentioned, Sam. But what they want to do and how that looks, it's unknown. The Simplot family does own significant land holdings in and around Boise, including a number of pieces of land downtown, land in the foothills. And this is interesting, they own a significant portion of the land in the area north of Micron. The city has long hoped to see that land developed. They actually have a plan that they call the Columbia Bench Plan. I don't have any reporting that says what this is about, but I do think it's noteworthy and worth mentioning. So we'll be watching that.
Yeah, definitely some juicy parcels out there that they could trade Simplot for. Absolutely.
There are, yes.
Rachel, the Meridian School District had a fundraiser that went viral in a nice way. What happened?
Yeah, so it was actually the Meridian Library District. Nice. Every year around this time, they have a fundraiser to support the Meridian Library District and the libraries within that district. And this year they were selling banned book shirts. And so basically it says read banned books, and it has a bunch of titles of historically banned books. And, you know, it was kind of a nod, I believe, at you know, what's been happening lately in libraries and library board meetings nationwide, you know, protests and outcry over, you know, what some deem inappropriate material at the library. And, you know, I'm sure many listeners, you know, if you've read any news at all, know that the Meridian Library District, you know, was one of the places that kind of had some protest and attention from the Idaho Liberty Dogs. And, you know, there was a lengthy contentious meeting that went along with that. So, you know, this shirt and the fact that it, you know, went viral after a local TikToker, who's actually a book talker, which is the book side of TikTok, for anyone who doesn't, you know, isn't like well-versed in TikTok lingo. So she posted about the shirt, and they have, as of yesterday, had gotten $30,000 in donations and shirt purchases. And the library district is looking to build a new library location in Meridian. So, you know, that funding is going to programming at that library. So, you know, the library district was really happy with the success of that. And it was kind of a happy, you know, end of the year story for them after a difficult year.
Yeah, it was. It's a nice feel-good story. Thanks, Rachel. And it might not happen again because Betsy, Governor Brad Little banned TikTok this week, at least on state computers and networks, which is a good lead into that.
Governor did was he issued an executive order that banned the use of TikTok on all state-owned devices and state networks. So this is for the executive branch of state government. And there were exceptions for bona fide law enforcement investigatory uses. But Governor Little was the next in a line of Republican governors who have taken this step because TikTok has gotten very hot politically. And there have long been concerns about TikTok because it is owned by a Chinese company. I remember when Senator Jim Risch was the Senate Foreign Relations Chairman in 2018, and I was talking with him about how he was approaching that role. He actually mentioned then to me his concerns about TikTok and that the Chinese government could get access to U.S. users' information through that seemingly harmless app. These concerns have become much more current since the director of the FBI testified to Congress last month saying he has very strong concerns. The Biden administration is currently in negotiations with TikTok over proposals to allow them to keep functioning in the United States, but with much more rigorous security measures. The parent company has moved its headquarters to Singapore a couple of years ago rather than China, but they are still Chinese owned. And so there continue to be these big concerns about TikTok. But the difference is, are we talking about banning its use on government devices, or are we talking about banning TikTok entirely? So Governor Little's executive order has to do with government devices. And yesterday, the U.S. Senate passed a bill to ban the use of TikTok on all federal government devices. And there have already been administrative bans issued by the Department of Defense, the Department of Homeland Security, and so on. There's another proposal out there as well. Senator Marco Rubio on Tuesday, along with a bipartisan group, introduce legislation to ban the use of TikTok entirely in the United States. Now, there are First Amendment concerns with taking that step. Certainly, we see around the world authoritarian governments restricting their citizens' use of various types of social media platforms. It's a little tougher to do in a free country like the United States. But this is very much a current issue, and we're going to hear more about it.
Well, and when we talk about Little banning it on state computers and networks, it's not just, you know, the governor's office. If you extrapolate out, your colleges and universities, Boise State, they're all technically part of the state network.
Sure. And many of them, many agencies may have been using TikTok in their outreach or marketing efforts or to reach their target populations or clients. And this calls a halt to that. I am not a big TikTok aficionado, and I'm not familiar with all the lingo. But when I looked at their website, I saw that TikTok says that their mission is, quote, to inspire creativity and bring joy. That doesn't sound that harmful. And they claim that they would never share U.S. users' information with the Chinese Communist Party. But there are great concerns that the party could get access simply because they are a Chinese company.
Interesting. Interesting. All right. Before we head back to the State House, I want to go to NAMPA. And Dawn, so, okay, the Lactalis Cheese Factory in NAMPA is finally going to start selling its cheese to us regular mortals. And Dawn, before you tell us about it, I just want to stop and say one of my colleagues here at the radio station was there the day that Lactalis took over the cheese factory. He brought back this goodie bag from the factory of samples of the most amazing cheese I have ever tasted. And it was fantastic until we found out that most of that cheese wouldn't be sold regularly in Idaho because it got shipped out to fancier cheese places, I guess. I was very bummed. That has changed over time a bit, but now I will finally be able to get my hands on some of that premium cheese directly. Tell me how.
Yeah, Sam, it sounds like you need to make a TikTok video about that experience.
I know.
So if you've been here a while, you probably remember the Swiss Village Cheese Factory that was on Franklin Boulevard. The buildings are still there, but in 1999, the J.R. Simplot Company, which is coming up a lot today and probably should disclose as my wife's employer, sold the plant and the operations to a French dairy company named Lactalis. Lactalis closed the cheese store. It closed, they had a gas station there. It closed a small cafe and a cheese factory tour. All those things closed and went away. And I think there's definitely been some nostalgia for that. About a year ago, Lactalis decided to get back into the retail game out there and opened a fairly modest cheese store, but it was only open to employees. It was billed last year as a perk for employees of the cheese factory with discounted products. Well, now Lactalis has taken that small cheese store and made it open to the public. And you're right, they do have a wide array of products out there made by Lactalis. Some brands that you probably recognize. They actually had a brand called, I think it's Galabani, that is like ricotta cheese, which my wife uses in her lasagna, and we bought at Christmas, and I was like, oh, this is made here. And so you can go out there and get cheese and other dairy products that are made in Nampa. I'll tell you, one question that I've gotten a lot is, will they have squeaky cheese? The answer, sadly, is I don't think so. Squeaky cheese, if you'll remember, if you have those nostalgic memories like I do, was exactly what it sounds like. Little cheese curds, often warm off the line out there. And when you ate them, they kind of squeaked. And it was, you know, like interactive food. Who needs an interactive TikTok when you can eat squeaky cheese?
Yeah. Yep.
And so they won't have that, at least right now. And it isn't maybe quite the same as what it was. But it is kind of interesting to see something nostalgic come back. And honestly, this story is done crazy traffic this week. I think people are excited to have a new place to pick up some dairy made here in Idaho.
And good cheese. I can tell you that. Good cheese.
The Idaho Press also had a story about this. That it's going to have pretty limited hours. I believe they're only going to be open one day a week to the public.
Yep. Every Friday from noon to six. So get your cheese on Friday.
Yeah. Head out on Friday and get that cheese. And I was looking at that story, Betsy, because you guys had a listing of some of the stuff, lots of mozzarella, fresh mozzarella, as you said, the ricotta, Dawn, feta, sharp cheddar, butter, whey powder. Yeah, that's pretty exciting. Okay, let's head to the State House. Clark, why are there a bunch of bronze women's shoes on the lawn at the Idaho State House?
Yeah, Kelsey Mosley Morris had this story for us early in the week, but there's a new statue in front of the Idaho State House that is commemorating the country and the state granting women the right to vote. Now, in 1896, Idaho was the first state to enshrine the right for women to vote as an amendment into the state constitution. And so this was unveiled earlier this week by the Idaho State Historical Society. Folks from the Historical Society, Idaho Governor Brad Little and First Lady Teresa Little were there for to unveil the statue. And it was actually originally supposed to make its debut in 2020 to coincide with the 100th anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment, which granted national suffrage to women. But this was all delayed because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So we had the ceremony out there on Monday of this week. And it's kind of cool. It's right there in front of the State House. You'll see it as you're walking up there on, I want to say, Jefferson Street. And yeah, there was a big ceremony. The Idaho State Historical Society unveiled the statue, and it was to commemorate women's right to vote in Idaho and across the country. So kind of a cool celebration earlier this week.
It's a really neat statue. You should go check it out.
Yeah, the symbolism with all the different shoes and kind of progress forward leading to today. It's a really cool statue and definitely worth checking out there at the Idaho State Capitol building.
Sweet. Let's go inside now of the Idaho State House. We touched on this a little bit, but Betsy and Clark, you both wrote more about this. Betsy, the legislature's budget writing committee is gearing up for the new year. There's a chance to spend some of that $1.54 billion surplus, as Clark mentioned. But there are a bunch of, dare I say, newbies on the Joint Finance and Appropriations Committee, JFAC, this year. How is that going to affect things this session?
Yeah, that's correct. And this is fairly unusual. Out of the 20 members of the Joint Committee, 9 will be first time ever serving on JFAC, and 7 of those 9 are freshman legislators who've never even served in the legislature before. Now, there are even higher numbers who weren't on the committee last session, but some of them had previously served on JFAC, including in earlier terms or even when they served in a different house or during earlier terms that they served in the legislature. But 9 out of 20 brand new. And so JFAC held kind of an organizational orientation meeting last week to kind of give, mostly by Zoom, a few people were there in person, to try to acquaint these new members with what they're up against and the task that's ahead of them. It's quite complicated. They will be drafting 108 original appropriation bills during the course of the legislative session, one for every agency, plus all the supplemental appropriations and everything else. This is where the budget for every state agency gets written. The agencies put in requests, the governor makes a recommendation to the legislature, and the joint committee hashes out a budget. It still then has to pass both the House and the Senate and be signed into law by the governor to take effect. But mostly in history, once a budget's set by JFAC, it doesn't change in the House or the Senate. Now, we have seen some cracks in that facade in recent years in one house or the other saying, no, go back and try again. And with so many inexperienced hands, would there be more of that? Will they be more cautious in their approach? It's going to be really interesting to watch. We heard that a whole lot of these new members really want to work hard and dig in and do their homework, which is what that committee is known for. It is the only committee in the legislature, well, first off, that includes 10 members from each from the House and Senate, but also that meets at 8 o'clock in the morning every day, pretty much of the legislative session, starting on the second day of the session. And they have a lot of hard work ahead of them, and they say they're ready.
Well, you mentioned 108 appropriation bills, and for anybody who's watched JFAC, it's a grueling committee. It is constant work, constant not only looking at bills and voting on bills, but changing up bills, and folks get there even before 8 o'clock to do pre-JFAC sessions. So it gets pretty nuts. Clark, you've been doing a lot of behind the scenes looking at the legislature coming up this year. What are you seeing? What are you thinking? What are you worried about or optimistic about?
Well, I'm worried about Betsy not being there, and I want to take a minute to congratulate Betsy on her upcoming retirement.
We're all worried about that.
Yeah, after I want to say 37 years of covering Idaho journalism, and so that's what I'm worried about is the institutional knowledge that we'll be missing in the press corps, and so it'll be a challenge for each of us, and a challenge it will absolutely be because of the change in leadership in the House. New Speaker of the House, Mike Moyle, and a whole new slate of House leadership members. New JFAC, I think, is going to be really interesting to watch. I've known Representative Wendy Horman, the Idaho Falls Republican, who is going to be the House co-chair of JFAC. I've covered her for the last 10 years and talked to her a little bit about the responsibility she feels to help out with some of the younger, all these freshman legislators that are going to be on JFAC. That work actually started this fall. She had kind of a JFAC orientation open to new members of the legislature. It was done online and over Zoom. And I think Representative Horman told me there were 18 people who participated in that, who want to work hard But it's going to be tricky, and that's going to be one of a handful of committees that we're really going to want to watch closely this year. It is the Money Committee, as Betsy said, the 108 appropriations bills, and so it's an extremely important committee to watch closely. And I think uncertainty really is the word for me that I'm focused on heading into this 2023 session with all the changes, new leadership, new JFAC committee, new chairs of Health and Welfare Committee, new chair of Senate Education Committee, new chair of the House Revenue and Tax Committee. And so I think uncertainty really is the word that I'm focused on heading into the new session, which is going to kick off January 9th at the Idaho State Capitol Building. The first day is always dominated by the State of the State address that Governor Brad Little will deliver. And so I think it's going to be a challenge. I think Betsy's going to be missed. And I think there's going to be a lot of new faces. And so that might mean a slower start to the legislative session. But we'll have to wait and see. But I think just tons of uncertainty. And so each and every one of the reporters that will be there will have their hands full covering this, following these new folks and following who carves out what role and plays places their influence where.
Well, and you're right. I mean, new folks have new ideas, and that could mean a lot of change in the legislature. You're never too sure what's going to happen. Let's wrap it up. We've got about 2 minutes left. Dawn, BoiseDev.com noticed there are an awful lot of car washes around Boise and went to find out why. So why?
Yeah, we do an ongoing series called You Asked, and people write us all the time and ask the most random questions from, you know, is there a new Wendy's going in to, hey, what's up with all the car washes? And in this particular case, my reporter, Autumn Robertson, looked at this. And there are a couple of really interesting reasons for this. One is we're seeing an increase in new retail across the valley, especially in the western side and in Meridian. Two, there's been some new concepts for the kind of long drive-through tunnel thing that has helped them pop up. And another one that I thought was really interesting is that we're seeing the business model for car washes change. So instead of the old model where you waited 6 months and your car was really dirty and you're like, I'll give it a wash, more and more these washes are going to a sort of Netflix-like subscription model where you pay a fee every single month that comes out of your bank account, and you can go as often as you want. So this builds a steady income stream for the car wash operators that is impervious to really snowy, gross, nasty Novembers and Decembers. I don't think we've experienced that. They're going to get their $20 out of your bank account, even if you don't go to the car wash. So really interesting changes. And you know what? There's a whole bunch more of these on the docket. So if you want to get your car washed, you're going to be able to find one.
Well, and I think also in the article, not only just the snow and the mess in the winter, but summer can also be hard on your car. So, yeah, lots of appeal for car washing.
It's true. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So is everybody ready for the legislature? Yes or no? 1, 2, 3. Betsy? You're not going to be here. You're ready to go
skiing. Sorry.
You're going to go skiing. Don, what about you?
Yep. Our reporters will be focused on property taxes and municipal issues.
Sweet. Clark?
I'll be ready in 3 weeks, and I'll be there with Kelsey Mosley Morris providing coverage for the Idaho Capital Sun. I'm not ready now, but I promise to be ready in 3 weeks, I hope.
And I should absolutely say that my successor, Laura Guido, will be still writing the Eye on Boise blog. It will be at the same address, and the Idaho Press will have full coverage.
Sweet. All right, we've been speaking with our reporters today, Kalama Hines, reporter with EastIdahoNews.com, Betsy Russell, the Boise Bureau Chief at the Idaho Press, and the voice of the Eye on Boise blog, which will continue, as she said. Rachel Spacek with the Idaho Statesman, Don Day, the founder and editor of BoiseDev.com, and Clark Corbin with the Idaho Capital Sun. Thanks, everybody. Have a good weekend.
Thanks for having us on.
I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim and Godette. This is Idaho Matters.
Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.